Right. As we continue to look at Philippians chapter 2, we began to look at it on last week. And as we was looking at verse 12 through verse 18, we find that what this dealing with is still dealing with unity. Unity in the church, unity among believers. And these few verses is unique because it brings us the greatest subject, and that is salvation. And so we have to keep in mind, as we mentioned last week, that salvation means deliverance, and that salvation is of God. It is God who has saved us. It is God who have delivered us. And so according to Ephesians chapter 2, verse 8 through verse 9. But also we need to understand that once you are saved, you have to go to work. And that means that you got to work out your own salvation and deliverance. And so that tells us that salvation is not complacency. It's not you sitting around and doing nothing. In other words, you get up and you go to work. And so if the church is to be unified, if Christians are to walk in a spirit of unity, then they must look at their salvation that God has given them and do all they can to work out their own deliverance. And so as we looked at verse 12 through 18, and what we found and what we're going to be discussing is that there are six types of work that you find within these verses. We began to look at it last week. The first work is to work out your own salvation with fear and trembling, verse 12. The second work was to work at obedience. In other words, there must be an excitement of God within our heart. That's verse 13. The third work is work at not murmuring. That's verse 14. The fourth work is to work at being pure. That's verse 15. The fifth work is to work at witnessing. That's verse 16. And then the sixth work is to follow the example of sacrificial labor. That's verse 17 and verse 18. And so as we look at the first work again, work out your salvation. Now you got to remember now that Paul is in prison, and he is being held on false charges, and there is a good chance that he will be executed, and so he's not sure that he will ever see and share with the Philippians again. And so what he is now writing is carefully chosen. Paul said that in essence that they had always obeyed God, not only when he was with them, but also when he was away. And we looked at the Greek word last week of obeyed, and we said obeyed means to conform. It means to heed a command or authority. And so Paul commends the Philippians for their obedience. But at the same time, he exhorts them to continue in obedience. And so he understands the tendency is not only for them, but even for us today, to misbehave and disobey when the authority figure is absent. And so the immediate absence of the authority figure should not mean less obedience. It should mean more obedience. And so Paul was not their ultimate authority figure. Jesus Christ was their ultimate authority figure. And so Paul encourages them. He said, listen, whether I'm with you or not, this is what you got to do. Number one, you got to work out your own salvation. So what do we mean? We talked about workout. What do we mean to work out? Workout means to work on to the finish, to complete. It means to complete the effort and the work begun. To work out your own salvation means to cooperate with what God is doing as it relates to your salvation. And so the point is, don't go in there doing it halfway. So do not go halfway in your salvation. Do not take bits and pieces when there is a whole parcel. You work out your salvation. Why? Because it's your salvation. And the point is, once God has saved a person, then that person is to get busy obeying God. And he says, look how you work it out. You work out your salvation with fear and trembling. Well, what is that? Because of the trials that we face, because of the temptations of life, because what it can do is it can throw us, it can cause us to buckle under. We can slip into sin and failure before we know it, unless we are constantly working out our deliverance. And so fear and trembling, lest we disappoint the Lord, because he has saved us. When we sin, it cuts his heart. But also we are to fear and tremble, because one day we are to face the judgment seat of Christ. So we need to be doing all that we can each and every day to work out our salvation and our deliverance. And then in verse 13, which is the second thing, you got to work out your obedience. It's a work. Work your obedience. Look at verse 13. For it is God who worketh in you, both to will and to do his good pleasure. Now, when you look at the word worketh, the word worketh means to energize. It means to energize. God is working within us, energizing us, giving us both the will and the power to do what pleases him. Now notice what I said. I didn't say what pleases you. What pleases him. Our duty is to grab hold of the steering and do exactly what the steering are energizing us to do. And that is to work out our salvation, but also to that God is working in you both to will and to do his good pleasure. So the energetic work of God within us should lead to work without complaint. Let me say that again. It ought to lead to work without complaint. The attitude in which we work should be accompanied with a joyful spirit. In verse 12 and 13, again, why is that? Because he says, wherefore, my beloved, as you have always obeyed, not in my presence only, but now much more in my absence, work out your own salvation with fear and trembling, for it is God who worketh in you, both to will and to do his good pleasure. And so we have to look at it in verse 12 and 13. Now watch this. In verse 12 and 13, the focus is on the individual working out your own salvation. But when you look at verse 14 and 16, which we begin to, the focus is on a group. The implication is this. You can't work together until you can work individually. You can't work together until you can work individually. Well, what do you need to do? Well, verse 14 tells us. Verse 14, he says, do all things without murmuring and disputing. Murmuring means to mutter, to mutter, to murmur, to grumble and complain. It means the quiet, soft behind the back undertone of murmuring and grumbling. It is the kind of criticism, dissatisfaction, fault finding, and gossip that goes on within small groups or cliques. And so that's what Paul is saying. You got to be careful of that. You need to watch that, because you need to be busy working out your salvation. And you got to do it in a right spirit. And so he says, without murmuring. But then he says, disputing. Disputing means arguments, outward and vocal questioning and expressions of doubt. So if murmuring and disputing are allowed to fester, to continue, if it is not stopped, it will lead to division. It will lead to turmoil in the church. And so we have to understand that. We can't allow it to continue to fester. Why? Because of what it can cause. It causes turmoil in the church, division. And we have to understand that murmuring and disputing are never of God. When you look at the Philippian church, there was a hint of confusion and disagreement taking place, much like there is in most congregations. There's confusion. There's disagreements that take place. And in many cases, we are like children. We can't work independently. Therefore, we can't work together. Because you remember what I just said just a while ago, that you can't work together until you can work individually. And so if you can't work individually, you're going to have a hard time working together. We complain, we murmur for various reasons, and we never murmur and complain about ourselves. Oh, let me say it again. We never murmur and complain about ourselves. We are always complaining and murmuring as it relates to somebody else. And so we have to understand that. And we, you know, we ought to be too busy. And if you're really working for the Lord, if you're really involved in the work of the church and doing what God wants you to do, you ought to be too busy to complain and dispute. People who are busy working for the Lord have neither the time nor the energy to complain. I found out the very ones that complain is the ones who ain't doing nothing. And so if you are busy working for the Lord, you have neither the time nor the energy to complain. No good deed should be accompanied with a complaint. If you find it necessary to complain, then it is best not to do the deed. If you're going to work and complain about it, don't do it. And so we have to understand it. Don't do something for someone, then complain about doing it. Don't do anything for the Lord and complain about doing it. So murmuring and disputes were the very sins that brought judgment upon so many Jews in the wilderness wandering of Israel. Because the person who is always murmuring and disputing is not working at his or her salvation. So the results of murmuring are far worse than people ever think. Because this is the primary reason God forbids. Well, why is that? Because of what it can lead to. It leads to hurts, damage, divides, tear down, downs a person, calls a person to look different as somebody else. It opposes God's will. It hinders progress. It misleads people, self-centered. And what it does, it says, look at me, push people away from Christ and the church. Don't ever be guilty of pushing people away from Christ and the church by your grumbling and complaining, because it can happen. We can drive folk away from the church. We can drive folk away from Christ. And so Paul says, do all things without murmuring and disputing. Well, why? Why do I have to do all of these things? Because that is the fourth work, is in verse 15. That you may be blameless and harmless, the sons of God, without rebuke, in the midst of a crooked and perverse nation, among whom ye shine as light in the world. So Paul gives the reasons. He does not want the Philippians to complain. There are two general reasons. The first reason involves their appearance before others. That's the first reason. their appearance before others. And the second has to do with Paul's rejoicing. There should be no room for reproach from the world in which they live. Paul says, listen, that you may become blameless, harmless, children of God without fault in the midst of a crooked and perverse nation, a generation. There should be no hint of blemish, murmuring, and disputing would be an indication for blemish and fault. How can we claim to experience God's presence, or God's peace, rather, if there is no peace among us? We can't claim to experience God's peace when there is no peace, when there's turmoil, griping and complaining. How can we claim unity if there is no unity among us? If we can't even work together, how can we claim to be God's children if we are not imitators of God? Blameless, free from fault. See, no one is to be able to point to the Christian and accuse or blame him with anything. The Christian, if you are a child of God, is to be clean, unpolluted, spotless, holy, righteous, and pure before man and God. Yes, we're going to mess up, but we got to get it right. We got to get back right. When I mess up, then, Lord, forgive me and get back on the right track, because the world is looking at you. If you claim to be a child of God, then there ought to be something different about you. And so we see that they had to work on being harmless, unmixed. It is the idea of flour or grain passing through and to separate, a machine to separate the pure from the unpure, impure. It means that our faults and our lives are not polluted with negative junk. So we have to understand that. They had to work on being blameless. We got to work on it. They had to work on being harmless, unmixed. We got to work on it. And they had to work on being without rebuke, spot defects. And so we got to understand why. Because of the fact, look what he says. Look what he says. Why do we do this? He said, number one, you're living in the midst of a crooked and perverse nation. This is why you do it, because you got to shine as light in the world. In Matthew chapter 5, let your light, 14 and 13, let your light so shine that others can see your good works and glorify your Father which is in them. See, we got to shine so we can point folk to Jesus. That's why we do it. We got to work at it. Again, these are some things. If these four, these things that we've just talked about so far, that's enough work to keep us busy, to keep us from griping and complaining. We got enough right there. But then he adds on. He adds on the fifth one. Witness. Verse 16. Look what he says. Holding forth. Look what you got to do. by working out your salvation, there's a lot of things that you got to do. In verse 16, he said, holding forth the word of life, that I may rejoice in the day of Christ, that I have not run in vain, neither labor in vain. See, we must also be described as holding fast the word of life. What do this mean? This means we should share the gospel with the world. We should indeed function as those in the light. We should become a medium for those in darkness to see Christ. So here's my question I want you to think about. That question is, can people see Christ in you? I'm not just talking about on Sunday. I'm talking about every day. Can people see Christ in you? Because that's how you got to function. You got to function as light. Because if you're going to be imitators, Jesus is light. And we got to function as light. We got to become that medium for those in darkness to see Christ. And we should express the power of the gospel to transform lives. And we should present the gospel as a source of light to those dying from the decaying effects of sin. So another work is we got to witness. We got to work at being witnesses. We got to work at being examples for the Lord. And then verse 17 and 18, he says, yea, and if I be offered upon the sacrifice and service of your faith, I joy and rejoice with you all. For the same cause also do ye joy and rejoice in me. Paul considered his life as an offering to the Lord. He has no regrets. He faces his circumstances with joy because he has given his life to the Lord. Listen, what about you and I tonight? We ought not have no regrets. We ought to be facing the circumstances, the things that we go through with joy because if you have given your life to the Lord, then you understand that God can help you through your situation. That's why James said, count it all joy when you fall into temptation, knowing this, that the trying of your faith worketh patience. So this is the simple truth of this text, and we'll close out tonight. We work cooperatively with the energetic activity of God within us by obedience. And when we do that, we then work cooperatively together without complaining and disputing with one another. And when we do this, then those in the world have an opportunity to experience the light. And at the end of the cycle, we are all able to rejoice. So I hope that you go back and you begin to look at these works and make sure that you are following them, that you're doing, that you're working on these things because of the fact that it's going to help the church to grow. But not only is it going to help the church, but it's going to help you as individuals to grow. Next week, Lord willing, we'll look at the remaining verses beginning 19 through 30, because what Paul going to do, you're going to find what Paul does is Paul, he shifts. He began to come to a point where Paul, he appears to a sudden change in his subject of what he's talking about, because he's going to be dealing with two people. He passed by these two of his co-workers. He's going to be looking at Timothy and Epaphroditus. And be looking at that and see what you can find out in verse 19 to verse number 30.